Welcome back to the Conservative Cat Show, where we have the truth. The truth has claws and liberty has teeth and common sense has not gone extinct. This is the show. I'm your host, Kat. I'm unapologetically conservative, Christian, pro-family, America first, and I'm allergic to big government. So we're going to get into Chicago's chaos because there was a curfew veto. And this proves that Mayor Brandon Johnson's loyalties obviously lie with the rioters, not the residents of Chicago. And then we're going to get to Pritzker's pork. Porky Pritzker. He signed, obviously, this budget that includes House Speaker Emmanuel Chris Welch, his playground. It was a stadium. Okay, $40 million for this sports stadium in his district. And meanwhile, Illinois is crumbling. Our infrastructure is crumbling. So we're going to get to all of it. So while you're here, be sure to subscribe and go to PatriotPumpEnergy.com today. PatriotPumpEnergy.com. Grab your bottle of Patriot Pump, $10 off at checkout. Best promo code out there. Use promo code ConservativeCat. Okay, now folks, gather around, sharpen your claws, because today's episode, we are diving into the absolute clown show that is happening in Chicago. Over the past 2 weeks, chaos has once again erupted in Chicago on North Avenue Beach. Specifically, there were 5 arrests, massive crowds, and as usual, the city leaders, the so-called leaders, they're scrambling out to figure out why teens are running around like Lord of the Flies, Windy City edition. Okay, this looks like Lord of the Flies. These kids are going crazy. They're hurting each other. They're looting, rioting. It's a teen takeover. And this has been happening for quite some time. And just when you think it couldn't get any worse, Mayor Brandon Johnson, defund reality, defund police, Mayor Brandon Johnson, that guy, he steps in and he vetoes common sense curfew ordinance, this common sense curfew ordinance. That's right. It's a piece of legislation that might have actually protected residents, businesses, and even the kids, the teenagers who are lost. Okay. And they've completely taken over the city. It would have helped these kids out, a curfew ordinance. But this was, of course, shut down by the man who's clearly more worried about his activist street cred rather than protecting the people who elected him to be the mayor of Chicago. So let's get the facts out of the way and let's talk about the vote. 27-22, this passed a modest curfew measure. Okay, this is an ordinance that gives the police authority to enforce order when things, you know, predictably spiral into chaos and darkness. Okay. After dark, it gets much, much worse in Chicago because the teens take over your Walgreens. They loot things like deodorant. They've had to lock up things as simple as deodorant in these poor little Walgreens pharmacies. This wasn't a partisan thing. Okay. A lot of the Democrats, I mean, pretty much all of the aldermen are Democrats, right, in Chicago, but this wasn't really partisan. This wasn't like a dystopian crackdown. Okay, this was basic civic responsibility. Chaos just spirals out of control after dark in Chicago, and they wanted to do this modest curfew measure. Mayor Brandon Johnson, he just vetoed it. First veto ever, since 2006. Okay, so no Chicago mayor has really vetoed anything since 2006, and what a way to use it to break precedent, okay? Not to block corruption, not to cut bloated spending of the transit system, not to do any of that. He did it to block a curfew enforcement in the middle of a city plagued by crime, looting, and teen flash mobs. So this is just mobs, okay? He could have vetoed a tax hike. He could have vetoed one of these city contracts that were going to go to his buddies. No. He vetoed law and order. Okay, so this isn't just about incompetence. This is ideological sabotage. He's sabotaging the residents based on his own ideology, and he's not representing them. Let's take a listen to Chicago Mayor Brandon Johnson's response to somebody saying, and I'm going to get to her in just a second, but her name's Alderman Monique Scott. She's a Black single mother, and she came out and she flat out said, she goes, just because you're Black, disadvantage, that doesn't give you a license to wreak havoc. She's an older woman. Boom, mic drop. This was his response. Of course he sided with the rioters. Take a look.
We should be celebrating the fact that violent crime is going down in Chicago. That I'm rolling up my sleeves every single day. I told each and every one of you, I live in Austin. There is no mayor in the history of Chicago that wakes up in one of the most violent neighborhoods in Chicago. This is the thing that I think about every single day, protecting our children. You know what it feels like when you get a report when a 14-year-old is shot or worse, killed? That weighs on me every freaking day. I'm raising children in this city. I know what it's like to feel unsafe and to be targeted. We have to stop as a city falling to some of the most ridiculous remedial forms of governance. It has not worked. And now we're doing stuff that works, and then they want to come up with another idea that has not worked. What sense does that make? I'm saying ask deeper, more profound questions about why young people are gathering in spaces in the first place. That's why I was up to freaking midnight on Saturday night out, you know, hanging out with some of the young people at the late night basketball, showing up for these young brothers. They all could be my son. They can all be my nephews. And it's just like we're debating something that doesn't work. Why are we even debating it? Here's what people should be asking. Mayor Johnson, how is it that within 2 years, your administration has driven violent crime down in this city more than we've seen in a decade, if not longer? Ask me what is working versus a failed attempt to criminalize people.
Whoa. Wow. All right. So let's give credit where credit's due. We've got Alderman Brian Hopkins. Not exactly a right-wing firebrand like myself. He is out there telling it straight. He's been on the ground during these so-called teen trends. Okay, that's progressive speak for violent mobs of young people who are trashing the city, twerking on cop cars. Okay, Hopkins said the only time it stopped is when the clock struck 10 and the officers could come out and enforce curfew. That's the only time the carnage would stop, the teen takeovers would stop. So that's not, you know, a theory. That's not a tweet. That's not a woke consultant paperwork. That's not DEI paperwork. That's actually a real data point. That's what we call the only times that the teen takeovers would stop was when the clock struck 10. So this is a data point, and we're arguing facts. It stops when the police can go out and enforce curfew. So we're just asking to enforce curfew a little bit earlier so we can keep these teens off the street. And it's a good thing for the residents. It's a good thing for these lost teens. Even Alderman Monique Scott, I want to get to her. She's a Black single mother. And she got real with her colleagues. She flat out said being Black, being disadvantaged, does not give you a license to wreak havoc. Let's take a listen to what she had to say. And props to her and all the aldermen who spoke up and spoke out against this. And by no means are they conservative like firebrands, okay? Let's take a listen.
The chair recognizes Alderwoman Scott.
Good afternoon, everyone. I want to throw out a few words. Decency, respect, manners, law-abiding citizens. I don't speak much. I have a 17-year-old daughter that I have restricted do not go downtown. She's not going downtown because it's safe. She can't go because it's unsafe. I refuse to put, I have to use one of your quotes, Mayor. I am a Black woman raising a Black child in the city of Chicago. And I refuse to allow my 17-year-old daughter, who is being reared by a single mom, myself, that has a full ride to Stanford, go downtown because I want her to come home to me safely and alive. So she can't go downtown. And why? Because the streets are not safe for her. And we're arguing because these are not the regular kids like my daughter who can go downtown and mayor like your son who can go downtown, your daughter and your sons. These are people, these are children that are wreaking havoc. These are children that are shooting tourists. These are kids that are stomping on cars and twerking on cars. And these are the ones that we're protecting. Yeah, they mom need to protect them too. Because see, we forget the big picture. We put everything on the politician, but forget that they have a mom. I'm a single mom. And disadvantaged or unprivileged or Black does not mean that you give a license to roam and wreak havoc.
So I want to lay out the facts here. This is corruption in gym shorts. Okay. This wasn't $400,000. This was $4 million or $40 million, not $4 million, not $400,000, $40 million for a glorified political trophy that Welch is now calling an economic driver. This is not an economic driver. This is corruption in gym shorts. So what is it? It's $40 million of your money to an athletic district an athletic facility in his school district, in his own school district. So families across the state, they can't afford groceries. They can't afford skyrocketing property taxes. And you can't keep your kids safe. Look at what's going on in Chicago. I talked about Mayor Brandon Johnson vetoing a very modest curfew ordinance that everybody was for. Nobody's vetoed anything, by the way. No Chicago mayor has vetoed anything since 2006. So what did he use his veto on? He vetoed safety. So let me give you the fact. Governor J.B. Pritzker, the king of bloated budgets, he signed the $55.2 billion budget spending plan. This is the largest in Illinois' history in that monstrosity of a budget. There was this little sweetheart deal. It's the $40 million earmarked for a sports complex in Proviso Township High School District 209. That's Speaker Welch's backyard. Okay, when challenged about this, Speaker Chris Welch, he practically puffed out his chest and he said, if helping out Proviso is going to cost me an election, I'm fine with that. Well, that's mighty noble of you, sir, but too bad it wasn't your money you were throwing around. It's ours. And guess what? While Welch is padding his district with luxury spending, Republicans across the state have had zero opportunity to request similar funding. So quoted in the Center Square, Minority Leader Tony McComey said it very plain, very simple. This was not the year for the General Assembly to be getting pork projects. We just can't afford it. Exactly. This isn't about who gets what. This is about priorities. In this administration, Governor J.B. Pritzker and Emmanuel Chris Welch, the House Speaker, clearly their politics come before priorities. Okay, so Welch, he defended himself and he had the audacity to sit here and say, oh, well, there was $40 million. There was $40 million. For my district, but there was $30 million for this bridge in Kane and McHenry counties. Whoa, 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 Chris, you got to back up a second here, Chris. This man actually equated a $40 million sports stadium to a bridge infrastructure project. This is where liberal logic melts down faster than an ice cube in August in Illinois. Okay, this melts down, it's destroyed. And let me destroy it for you here. This logic here, Chris. Tony McComey will do it for me. She hit the nail on the head when she said, any leader who thinks that a $40 million sport complex is equivalent to a bridge rebuild clearly doesn't understand the infrastructure needs of Illinois. She's right. Illinois bridges are crumbling. I was 16 years old. I'll never forget it. I was like right when I got my license. Well, I was actually a permitted driver back then. I got my license at 18. But I was driving and I was a permitted driver. I ran into a pothole. I mean, it's like a minefield out there. Okay. I ran into a pothole and my tire went flat. And it was the scariest thing. I mean, I was just a 16-year-old girl. Actually, my driver's instructor was right in the car next to me, or right in the passenger seat next to me when it was going on. I was in the middle of my driving test. Yeah, figures that it happened to me, right? You know, and it freaked me out. And it's still like that. That's what the problem I have is we're handing out gold-plated football fields like we're flush with cash. This isn't about budgeting. What this is about is buying votes with other people's money. Now, folks, let's bring it back to something deeper, because it's all about biblical values here. Okay, it's not just about numbers. This is about morals, values. Let's open up the word, shall we? Proverbs 28:15 says this: like a roaring lion or a charging bear is a wicked ruler over poor people. So what does that mean? That means leaders who abuse their power, who take from people to enrich themselves or their image, are dangerous. Okay, so I want to also look at Luke 16, open up the word today. Luke 16, verse 10. Whoever can be trusted with very little can also be trusted with much. Whoever is dishonest with very little will also be dishonest with much. So that's Luke 16, verse 10. Speaker Welch cannot be trusted with little. He was handed a lot. He was trusted with a lot. And instead of showing integrity, he used his power to carve out a vanity project for his district while denying equal opportunity for others. This isn't just bad politics. I want to say it. Come here. I want to say it. This is unrighteous leadership. Let me say it again. Unrighteous leadership. So here's a reminder for every public servant listening. You will be held accountable, not by just the voters, but by God. And you are called to not serve your ego, but you are called to serve people. So let's get practical here for a second. Illinois already has a $140 billion debt, pension debt. We have the second highest property taxes in America. Our pension system is a ticking time bomb. Families are leaving the state in droves. And in the midst of all of that, you have the Speaker of the House, leadership, who thinks it's time to build sports stadiums. What does the district actually probably need? Clean water. Most 72 counties in Illinois have intense levels of lead. Okay. Just ask anybody in central Illinois, the water tastes like crap. We need safe roads. We need law enforcement support. That's what we need. We don't need more reckless spending. This is immoral. And let's not forget, Welch didn't just ignore Republican districts. He ignored his own party's poor districts. Okay. And he did that because he wants clout. That's really what this was. So this wasn't a partisan thing. It was a personal thing. It was a political favor to himself. So Illinois, we are just tired of getting lectured about equity and fairness from the people who don't live by those same words. Equity, fairness. The Welch Stadium is a symbol of everything that is broken in this state, a corrupt political machine that picks winners and losers while pretending to care about the people. You deserve a budget that works for everyone, not just the insiders. Transparency in how your tax dollars are spent, and you deserve leaders who fear God more than they fear losing their clout. Because I'll say it again, this is unrighteous leadership. If Speaker Welch wants to build a sports complex, then just have the taxpayers there, Proviso taxpayers, fund it locally. You can't rob McLean County, Rockford, Peoria, to have them fund a scoreboard in Hillside, Illinois. You can't do that. Bottom line, Chris Welch, he shows us what happens when politicians serve themselves instead of the people. Okay, and J.B. Pritzker, by signing this bloated monstrosity of a budget, confirmed that this government does not care how broke Illinois is as long as their friends get rich. This is your wake-up call. If you're an Illinois taxpayer, your wallet was just raided by the ruling class. So what do? We speak up. We vote out the grifters. We support leaders with a backbone, not a taste for pork. And above all, we restore God-fearing, family-centered, liberty-driven values to this state. We restore those values to our state. We should be God-fearing. This would freak me out if I was an Illinois politician and if I had done something like that, because I'm accountable to God. God sees everything, and this is just unrighteous. All right. So I will shift gears here. Let's talk about Jasmine Crockett. Jasmine Crockett, if you disagree with her, you're mentally unstable. That's what she said. Yes, yes, yes. So Jasmine Crockett was out there saying that Trump supporters are mentally unstable, which is interesting because all of the scientific evidence says that leftists are actually mentally unstable. There's been studies on this. In the same breath, she also believes that this country needs to be unified. Okay, well, you just called everybody who disagrees with you mentally ill, lady, with no evidence, okay? Now, I say that the left is mentally ill, and the reason why I say that is because there is scientific evidence that supports that. So let's get to Jasmine Crockett here and what she had to say about you.
That we don't care how many people get hurt. We don't care how we prostitute our service members, you know, thinking that you have your own special little army that's for you. I mean, it is just, it is sick. It is really sick. And anybody that supports it is also sick. And so, you know, we've got a mental health crisis in this country because everyone, no matter how you affiliate yourself, should be against Trump, period. This is not partisan for me. Like, I would give anything to have, sad to say, George Bush. Like, give me any regular Republican nowadays and I would be happy. But right now we have someone who does not care, and he is being enabled by the fact that there are, you know, people that follow him and they pump him up, as well as the people that are surrounding him. And so, you know, my heart breaks for service members, people that signed up to protect democracy and freedom, not only here, but abroad, and were willing to risk their lives. And now literally the very thing that they signed up to fight against is now their commander in chief. It really breaks my heart. And I don't know how far he has to go before we can come together and just say, enough is enough. Like, this should not be partisanship.
Oh, boy. All right. So that's Jasmine Crockett, according to Daily Caller. She, the Democrat Texas representative, Jasmine Crockett, called Donald Trump supporters mentally ill just moments before calling for bipartisanship to oppose him. Okay. During this episode, it was a podcast she was on. It was called The Next Question with Kate Couric. And she was a journalist. She asked Crockett to weigh in on the Los Angeles riots opposing immigration, the immigration raids, and Donald Trump's decision to deploy the National Guard and the U.S. Marines in response to these riots. She asked her to weigh in on that. Crockett responded, and I mean, rendered me pretty much speechless, by the way, because I was like, wait a second, she's calling conservatives mentally ill. Does she not know the studies? She's calling Trump supporters mentally ill. Does she not see the TDS, the people beating Trump dolls? Like, I literally watched a grown man, okay, pay 5 cents to grab a Trump Barbie and beat the thing on a table. Okay, and then I watched young kids, like little children, take pinata sticks and whack a Donald Trump pinata. There was no candy in it, which seemed like a disservice to the children. But she went on this anti-Trump diatribe, obviously, and she hates Trump. Why? Because he was trying to uphold law and order. Her side refuses to do the bare minimum to uphold law and order, which is why he had to send the National Guard and the U.S. Marines. She says, quote, "I truly have no words. You grow up as a little girl in this country and you think, man, this is a great place to live and it's only going to get better. And then you become an adult version of me and you have a president that is openly just a criminal, not like the convictions he got, consistently breaks laws, ignoring court orders, violating the Constitution, and doing it all because he's really seeking retribution. This is retribution he campaigned on. And he said, I will be a retribution. I'm going to be honest with you. The Trump administration, I voted for him for retribution. I'll just be honest with you. Yes, I wanted revenge. I wanted people to be locked up for jailing the J6ers. I wanted people to be locked up. I wanted Mark Zuckerberg to be carried and drug away in cuffs for the way he censored Americans in 2020 at the behest of Joe Biden. I wanted him to be cuffed because he shut down discourse about the COVID-19 virus and how ivermectin was an effective treatment, leading to several people getting injuries, COVID injuries from vaccines, COVID-19 vaccine injuries, leading to people thinking that that was the correct form of treating the virus when ivermectin did just as well, if not better, and you don't get injuries from taking ivermectin, right? I wanted Mark Zuckerberg to be cuffed. I wanted Nancy Pelosi to be cuffed and her daughter had a film crew there at January 6th to film it all. It was a setup. It was political theater. I wanted retribution. They're not giving it to me. Okay, so newsflash, Jasmine Crockett. There is no retribution or revenge happening. I wanted it. We're not seeing it. I would have loved to have seen all of that. Which goes to show you that Trump is a bigger person than I am, and probably the reason why he's the president of the United States, right? Because had I gone through the things that Donald Trump had to go through, I would have gone in there day one, arrested. Day one, arrested Mark Zuckerberg. Day two, arrested Tony Fauci. Actually, day one, arrest Tony Fauci, and then day two, arrest Mark Zuckerberg. And all the people who participated in January 6th and jailed. I would have, the guy who shot Ashley Babbitt, cuffed, gone. Actually, a needle in the arm. That's probably what I would have done had I been a leader. But no, Donald Trump didn't do any of that. Why? Because he's not actually seeking retribution. Okay. And she goes on, she says, and so this idea that we don't care about how many people we hurt, we don't care how we prostitute our service members, you know, thinking that we have our own special little army that's for you, it's sick. It's really sick. And anybody who supports that is also sick. So she's calling everybody, essentially more than half the population in the United States of America, the majority, as evident by the 2024 election, mentally ill. And it's unclear what she's talking about when she says he's just doing openly criminal things. Because I don't know what the hell she's talking about in that it's safe to assume that she's defending these criminal aliens, people who have committed crimes after the fact, post facto, after illegally entering the United States through an illegal port of entry, and they've committed crimes. That's who Donald Trump is targeting with these immigration deportations. So she doesn't talk about that crime. She says that Donald Trump upholding the law is a crime. So she also blasted a man who's been democratically elected. But remember, Democrats aren't actually pro-democracy. And she, I guess, doesn't realize that she took an oath, not just to the people who like her, okay, but she took an oath to represent all people, including the people who voted for Donald Trump. So she says, she goes, we've got a mental health crisis in this country. Because everyone, no matter how you affiliate yourself, should be against President Donald Trump, period. This isn't partisan for me. I would have anything, and this is sad to say, I would give anything to have George Bush, President George Bush, like, give me a regular Republican nowadays. I would be happy. Yeah, because you're an establishment hack, just like George Bush. Okay, but we have somebody who does not care. He's being enabled by the fact that there are, you know, people that follow him and they pump him up, as well as the people who are surrounding him. Okay, I think that it's absolutely rich that she calls conservatives the unwell ones when everybody and their grandmothers know that the left-leaning people who are, political, that they're actually the ones who have a higher chance of being diagnosed with a mental health disorder. Okay, that's just factual studies. Okay. So I don't know if she's ever considered why Donald Trump has such a huge following. She says all the people who follow him, enable him, and pump him up. okay, have you ever stopped and thought to yourself, okay, Donald Trump has a large following. I do not. Jasmine Crockett is said to be the party leader, but despite that, she's got a very, very small following. I think it's so funny. The DNC is going bankrupt, by the way. They're actually looking into taking out loans because they have no more money left. I think that's interesting, and I don't think it's a coincidence that once the USAID money dried up, they're all of a sudden bankrupt, by the way. But she has never stopped and thought, I guess, that, hey, I don't have a following. Donald Trump has a following. There's a reason for that, and it's probably a very simple reason. Donald Trump has vowed to represent all Americans. There's very few times where I've ever heard Donald Trump get out there. There was one time where Donald Trump talked about a very specific leftist, that one leftist, and we all know the meme where she's screaming at the sky after he gets elected in 2016. She's got the beanie. It's like an infamous meme. So that's the one time where I think he's called out a leftist, and it was one specific leftist. He's never talked about Democrats or leftists in a poor way. He actually represents all Americans, despite their political affiliation. And, you know, Crockett believes that you're mentally ill if you disagree with her. Donald Trump, surprisingly, never really calls out the left, like the voters. Now, he calls out the politicians, the Nancy Pelosi's, all of those guys. But he never really calls out the voters, and it's quite fascinating. Now, I want to get to this. This is a interview that I had with Senator Andrew Chesney. We're going to come back. I do want to get to J.D. Vance posting on Blue Sky. Blue Sky, this is the gay. Sorry. Can I say this now? Like, it's gay. Okay. Like, and I mean 2012 gay, not like actually homosexual, but it's stupid. Okay. This is the most gay platform I've ever seen in my life. And it doesn't do very well. So he actually got himself suspended, JD Vance, on this platform, Blue Sky. And it's because he started talking about the trans agenda. So we'll get to that, and the Supreme Court actually upholding a Tennessee law that restricts gender transition treatments for minors. I want to get to that, but enjoy this interview with Senator Andrew Chesney. Hey, it's Conservative Cat, and joining me right over there, that's Senator Andrew Chesney. Thank you so much for joining me.
So I haven't had a chance to read the GOP lawsuit that the caucus has filed, because we filed our lawsuit several weeks ago that was essentially arguing the same thing.
Hey, it's Conservative Cat, and joining me right over there, that's Senator Andrew Chesney. Thank you so much for joining me on the program, Senator. We're going to tackle a couple of things today. How you doing today?
Hey, doing great. Thanks for having me on. Appreciate it.
Good. So I saw this, another GOP lawsuit. Now, this isn't the Illinois Freedom Caucus. I don't think you guys are behind this one. Correct me if I'm wrong. Looks like Representative Weaver, Travis Weaver, might have been behind this one. Senate Bill 328. It looks like they launched a lawsuit after the Illinois Freedom Caucus had launched a lawsuit regarding the budget bill, this whole gut and replace thing, which I'll have you explain for our listeners and viewers. But they also did it, some GOP lawmakers, with Senate Bill 328. Can you tell me a little bit about these legal challenges to the procedure that the Democrats have been utilizing in Springfield?
Yeah, well, first of all, you're correct. The Illinois Freedom Caucus were the first to this lawsuit. We filed this lawsuit several weeks ago. The Illinois GOP in both the House and the Senate have filed a similar lawsuit challenging the three-reading rule. Three-reading rule is very simple. The Illinois Constitution requires that a bill is read both in the House and the Senate on three separate days. The challenge is the bill that they're reading has one word or one sentence in it. So the meat of the bill is not placed in the bill during the time it's being read into the record and being voted on. So you have the budget bill, for example, that is being discussed and voted on in committee and has one word or one sentence in it. And then about 2 hours before the last day of legislative session, they file the amendment and file a 2,000, 3,000, 4,000 page bill. and they ask us to read it in 2 hours. And so we have asked that we ultimately will ask that this Illinois Supreme Court take a look at this and relook at their decision. They had an opinion 20 years ago that said if the Speaker of the House and the Senate President certify that the three reading rule has been complied with, that satisfies the constitutional requirement. Okay. They can just say it is. That doesn't mean it actually was done. And the Supreme Court has held that position for the last 20 years. It is our intent with our legislation to get to the Supreme Court and ask them to revisit that opinion that was done a few decades ago.
So your lawsuit is asking them to revisit that decision.
That's right.
Okay. So where is the lawsuit at now, the Freedom Caucus lawsuit? And then I'm going to ask you to comment on the 328 one. Is it duplicative? Should the GOP lawmakers brought a duplicative or another lawsuit? Is that going to be helpful or is it going to muddy the waters a little bit? I guess we'll start there and then I'll ask you where your lawsuit's at, the Illinois Freedom Caucus lawsuit pertaining to the budget. So this other lawsuit has now entered the fold. What do you think about that? Is it muddying the waters? Is it a good thing? This is regarding 328. And if you're familiar with that bill, can you explain what that bill actually does?
Yeah. So I haven't had a chance to read the GOP lawsuit that the caucus has filed because we filed our lawsuit several weeks ago that was essentially arguing the same thing. Okay. I think what probably happened is when the Freedom Caucus filed the lawsuit and there was outcry in the communities that the members represented saying, why are you not doing a similar thing? And so they repackaged a similar lawsuit to file litigation against the three reading rule or a violation of the three reading rule. That's what I suspect probably happened. They're going to have some nuanced arguments to say that their lawsuit's slightly different than ours. We believe that our lawsuits will ultimately be brought together and we will debating the three reading argument together. So where theirs is at in the process is very new because it was filed just a day ago. Ours has been filed for several weeks. Our court date's on July 3rd. Does it muddy the waters? It certainly potentially can. You know, we are now being asked to partner with some, we will likely be asked to partner with somebody else on this litigation. Certainly, we would support any effort by any person, both members of the General Assembly and members of the public, when they see something wrong to file litigation against the Democrat majorities. And I think that in this case, they are right to file this litigation. They're just a little late to the party on it, right? We did this just a few days after the budget was filed, after the budget was voted on. We filed this within a few days. They took a couple of weeks and are not filing actually on the budget themselves on a bill that very few people are even familiar with. So very similar litigation in terms of the idea or the scope of the argument, different bills.
Okay. Senate Bill 328. Not a lot of people are familiar with it. It pretty much makes Illinois the lawsuit capital of the world, like a magnet, right, for lawsuits, essentially.
That's my understanding. It's a bad bill. We all voted against it. I would say the general public would be less familiar with it. It's certainly a gift to the trial attorneys. They're using that as the vehicle to argue the three reading rule. Our argument in the Freedom Caucus is that your taxes are going up because we don't have the ability to mount any defense against them. You're getting reparations stuck in a bill because people don't know about them. They took $40 million of property tax relief out of a bill and they stuck a $40 million pet project for Speaker Welch to build him a new school system or sports complex or a new sports complex, right? That doesn't happen, Kat, if you have a three reading rule guideline where you can debate the bill because people will be outraged. What happens is the day or day before session, typically on a Friday and a Saturday, it doesn't always have to be, they vote on these bills and we are getting emails in opposition and the bill's already done. It's already voted on in the House and the Senate, and the governor has already signaled that it's going to be signed into law. And so this is how the Safety Act was done. This is how the gas tax was done. This is how a lot of the awful of the awful gets constructed. And so the Freedom Caucus has decided that we are going to take this to court. Now, we didn't get the credit, not that we're looking for credit. I don't think we got the coverage we should have by some of the more traditional media markets, because they said, oh, it's just a bunch of conservative lawmakers making noise. We tested this amongst moderate Democrats, independents, and all the Republicans, and everybody agreed with us. And then we started having, you know, your media outlets and you know, other social media groups start picking this up, and it became widely popular in their districts, which is why I suspect the members did a similar lawsuit 2 weeks later.
Yeah. And, you know, like you said, you don't know the nuances of their case, but we had something kind of similar with the assault weapons ban. I remember there were several cases, and what ultimately happens, they get combined. Now, I'm kind of worried because, like you said, it could potentially muddy the waters. When you get into the courts and the judge gets these two cases, right, and he sees these two cases, and you're arguing this nuance, and they're arguing this nuance, and they're going, they could be potentially going about this a totally different way. You guys are going about it like, hey, there was a decision made 20 years ago. We want them to revisit this decision about how the House Speaker and the leader in the Senate President, how they can unanimously kind of say, like, yes, this was done. And it could not be done, but you have to go off their word, right? Essentially, that it was done. And it's like two people who essentially have that, you know, yep, check that box. The Illinois Constitution is followed, but was it? You guys are going after this nuance. You don't know what they're going after in their suit, right? The other GOP lawmakers with this bill, Senate Bill 328.
It's the same nuance. It's the same three reading requirement where they did, and I don't want to use Springfield language, but essentially what they say is a gut and replace. They take something in a bill that means nothing, or perhaps it was a bill. They take that entire bill out and they replace it with another bill, but it bypasses the transparency. It bypasses the ability to have it read in both the House and the Senate on three separate days. We're not talking an amendment where we've seen the structure of a bill and we negotiated amendments. We expect that to happen. We're saying that there wasn't even an intent to follow the rule, and they just simply either replaced the bill or they filed an amendment that included the bill.
Right. What I'm worried about is that they're going to argue something kind of different, where maybe they go after like this as a public scrutiny type thing where, hey, our constituents, they don't get to see the bill and they don't have proper debate. I'm not sure what their lawsuit is going to be arguing, like the nuances of it. But like, I'm thinking like a judge could see both these cases, and there's like two different ways you're going about this. It's all the same rule. You're all talking about the same rule, the three readings rule. But what if they argue, hey, this three readings rule is there in the Illinois Constitution to ensure debate and to ensure the taxpayers and our constituency get to see it for a longer period of time. What if they argue that, and I don't know what their argument is, and then you guys are arguing, hey, it shouldn't be two people's word that we did this. You know what I mean? So like, if there's different ways of, you know, arguing how this three readings rule in these two separate cases, they could side like, hey, we're going to go with this case and you have to join this case, you know, or you have to join this Freedom Caucus's case and you guys have to combine cases. And then one of these ways to, you know, argue that the three readings rule should be, you know, this way. I know I'm kind of being winded with my explanation here. I'm just worried that at the end of the day, the wrong argument is going to be selected here to get this done.
There's no argument. I think that there's little room for any debate that their inclusion, them filing this lawsuit certainly muddies the waters of what the Freedom Caucus has already done. I don't know that they are adding. They certainly have the right to file litigation. To be crystal clear, anytime you have somebody that wants to fight these Democrat majorities through litigation, I would encourage it. I think we should have more lawsuits against these bozos that do awful things for these taxpayers and everybody that I represent. I'm just saying it's a little convenient that they are filing essentially the exact same lawsuit on a separate bill 2 weeks later. I have great respect for many of the people that are on that lawsuit. They're good people. Many of them are good conservative people. I would just say that I don't know that they're adding to try to solve the problem. I think that they're filing a lawsuit to show their constituencies they're trying to do something, where we're actually trying to solve a problem of why these taxpayers are getting screwed, why the awful of the awful bills are getting passed, and we're trying to bring some visibility or because of the lack of transparency. I don't know what they really add, but we'll find out, as we proceed. No question. Okay.
One more thing I wanted to have you react to. This is just a quick clip. It's news that just came out. Judicial Watch, they're filing litigation over an Evanston reparations law. We're going to watch this and I'll have you react real quick, Andrew.
Hey, everyone. Judicial Watch just filed a major federal civil rights lawsuit up in Illinois to shut down a reparations program. That's right, a reparations program up in the city of Evanston, Illinois. They're giving away $25,000 in taxpayer cash to blacks only. If you identify as white, you can't apply. If you identify as Asian, you can't apply. If you identify as Hispanic, you can't apply. This is a brazen violation of the 14th Amendment, federal civil rights law, and Judicial Watch, once again, is happy to do the heavy lifting with this major civil rights lawsuit. It's a class action to shut down America's first reparations program. The Constitution's supposed to be colorblind, but the left in Evanston and those who want to play the racial division card, they don't believe that. And Judicial Watch is hoping and praying a federal court will remind them of the rule of law.
Okay, so I just wanted to throw that out there, get your reaction, because it's just in that they were going to file a class action suit. This was, I think, a 2019 law. And this is something to do with $25,000 grants. And this was the first reparations, law, I guess, first program to be implemented in the United States. Senator Chesney, your reaction just to reparations, maybe in general, and Judicial Watch filing the complaint.
Well, I think the idea that we're going to pay somebody based off of their race or whatever is wrong. The taxpayers should never be paying or refunding certain groups money just because of the color of their skin or their sex or their gender ideology. None of this really surprises me. This is in the Northwestern area. Governor Pritzker has his name on the law school there. They're very woke. They're very liberal. In their view, they're very progressive. And they would also argue they're very compassionate. I think they're totally out of touch. I mean, the idea that we are going to pay groups of people that have not been impacted dollar amounts just because of the color of their skin is outrageous. But I would have the same position regardless of what race they were targeting. I would have the same position across the board. We have to start having a merit-based system throughout the state and throughout the country. And the Democrats love to carve up these sections or these groups that are either marginalized in their view or potential voters or pockets of voters that have been longstanding supporters of theirs, and then try to galvanize them by telling them that the world is racist and they are being mistreated and this $25,000 will help with that mistreatment. Not a newsflash to many people, but the Democrats have controlled the state of Illinois for a half century, right? I mean, the Democrats have controlled the policies in Evanston, in the state legislature for pretty much a half a century, for 50 plus years, right? And they've had Democrat governors and they keep screaming racism, screaming about they want equity. Really what they want to do is they want to take it from somebody and they want to reallocate it to people that are supporters of theirs. All right. And that does that. That might be Black people. That might be white people. That might be woke left progressive people in the suburbs, whoever it is. They want to just reallocate the pie and then tell them the reason they're doing that is because they're being mistreated by Republicans or conservatives or white males that are downstate. The reality is the people that are the governing body in Illinois is dominated by Democrat policies that are putting terrible people in their communities through the open border crisis, that are taxing them out of their homes, that are driving businesses out of their cities. And the only people flooding here are people that are here illegally. And where do they put them, Cap? They don't put them in Evanston. They put them in the south side of Chicago. They put them in the poorest of the poorest areas. And guess who hates it the most? The people that live there. And they divert these resources by these very vulnerable groups. And then they say, well, we're going to carve out a little thing for you, give you a few bucks to keep you quiet. Oh, by the way, we're going to pack a bunch of illegal immigrants into your communities, but here's a little money to shut up. It should be offensive, one, to the people they're targeting, they're trying to give this money to, but it should offend everybody. The idea that you are going to allocate money to people based off of anything from race, sex, gender, anything, is just ridiculous, absolutely ridiculous policy. And I suspect they'll be successful in federal court.
Yeah. Well, Senator Andrew Chesney, that's coming up on our time, but really quick, tell people where they can find you. I know that I follow you very religiously on Facebook, all things that you're a big voice in the state Senate for small businesses, specifically landlords here in the state. And I've noticed that you've pushed legislation that tries to cut back on some of this red tape that a lot of those folks are seeing. Where can we find out more about you? And can you give me one more update on this lawsuit? When is your court date?
Yeah, so it's going to be July 3rd. This is going to be the emergency hearing. You know, if we make the proper case, perhaps we do think it's a long shot to get the emergency injunction. We expect this to go through the proper channels, but we are going to try. We're going to make the argument and the case to the judge that they need to stop this today. But we expect it's likely to go through the proper channels, where you would go through the lower courts and then the appellate court. And then we're going to make the argument to the Supremes. But the start of our case starts July 3rd. It's the first court date that the judge would agree to. So we are not dragging our feet. We're moving as fast as we can. We're trying to get some emergency relief. But we recognize, given the Supreme Court precedent on this issue, it's going to be an uphill climb. But that doesn't mean we're wrong. That just means we have to continue to make the case. You know, the Supreme Court, it does change their mind over time. The U.S. Supreme Court's changed their mind over time. So we're asking them to essentially reverse a decision that's almost 20 years old.
Yeah. Well, and then I'd be curious if you say the judge does temporarily, you know, stay this budget, what would that look like for me if I'm an Illinoisan?
Yeah, it would. I mean, ideally, we would like to be able to go back down to Springfield and make the debate and make the case to our constituents, right? So we can mount opposition. You know, I wouldn't have time to go on your show and mount opposition against the reparations that might have been in the state budget, or the money that they're allocating to Black Lives Matter, or some woke ideology, or some woke project that they're stuffing in the suburbs of the city of Chicago. You know, they tried to pass the Amazon tax or the pizza tax, however you want to dub it. You know, they did that within the last 2 hours of session, right? And it's dead on arrival now for at least a while, but not because we had enough Republicans that put up the fight. Is because people in the Democrat district started to learn about it and started blowing up people's phone at 10 o'clock at night saying, you can't support this. So Speaker Welch said, hey, our members aren't real comfortable about this, because we were able to mobilize people in just a few hours. So ideally, we'd like to go back down to Springfield and have a proper debate. We recognize as Republicans, the outcome is probably going to be somewhat similar, But I don't know that you would get the Safety Act passed if it was done the proper way. I don't know you'd get the gas tax passed if it was done the proper way. I don't know that you would get the $40 million for Speaker Welch's sports complex in his district if it was done the proper way. So we don't have, we're asking for the ability to mount opposition or mount support for something. Now, in most cases, when they're using the three reading rule and they're abusing it, this is not something Republicans would support, but they're doing that deceptively because they want to disrupt the normal process and confuse the constituency. That's why they're doing it intentionally. So outcome to be determined.
Okay. Well, Senator Chesney, thank you so much. And we can find you on Facebook, right?
Yeah. Andrew Chesney on Facebook, ChesneyForIllinois.com on my website. It's certainly a privilege to be on here. Honor and privilege to be with you today. And thanks for spending some time with us. So appreciate it.
Of course. That's State Senator Andrew Chesney. Folks, we'll be right back. Hey, folks, thanks so much for taking a listen to that interview I had with State Senator Chesney. Explosive stuff. Earlier in the show, we did talk a little bit about Chris Welch's sports complex. This is absolutely wild. It wasn't $4 million. This wasn't $400,000. This was $40 million. And Chris Welch, he obviously had the audacity to defend this thing. And he said, well, there was $30 million that went to a bridge in Kane and McHenry counties. Like, how could you equate a $40 million stadium, sports stadium, to bridge infrastructure? This is where liberal logic just doesn't hold up. Okay, it melts down faster than an ice cube in the middle of summer in Illinois. Bridges keep people alive, man. A sports complex, that's a ribbon cutting photo op, and you know it. And this was corruption dressed up in gym shorts. So I want to get to JD Vance because this is kind of hilarious. Blue Sky, I was telling you that this is a gay platform, and I mean 2012 gay, like dumb. Okay, like really dumb. This platform, nobody's really on. It's an echo chamber for leftists. Smash that like button, subscribe. By the way, while you're here, go to patriotpumpenergy.com. Support the show by buying your bottle of Patriot Pump today. I will take your chats here in just about 5 minutes. I'm going to do this story about J.D. Vance, take some chats, and then we're going to get to the Supreme Court upholding this Tennessee law that restricts gender transition treatments for minors. So we're going to get to that. But first, J.D. Vance, he joined this progressive fan fiction site called Blue Sky to engage with them and engage. I'm putting that in air quotes here because you and I both know, you know that I know, and I know that you know that the best decision that Donald Trump ever made, J.D. Vance, knew exactly how this was going to turn out and what was going to unfold. Yet the leftists, what they did, they fell for J.D. Vance's antics here. Okay, so the tale begins with our 6-3 Supreme Court decision that sided with science and sided with sanity and sided with reality. The court upheld this Tennessee law that says you cannot do genital mutilation on minors, essentially. So this was a law that was restricting genital mutilation, and it was disguised. Okay, this genital mutilation is disguised always as trans-affirming care. This was a very contentious issue in America, and it has been for quite some time. So one side thinks that you're too young to get a Tylenol from the nurse, the school nurse, without a phone call to mom. And you're too young to drive a car. You're too young to smoke cigarettes or buy alcohol, but you aren't too young to go chop your balls off. That's what one side thinks. And the other side says, well, that doesn't make a whole lot of sense. And the side that thinks that kids that can't go buy alcohol, cigarettes, they can't even get an aspirin from the school nurse without a phone call to mom, they think that people who disagree with the genital mutilation, they think that the other side is transphobic. Okay, so you're caught up to speed on this whole contentious issue. The vice president went to Blue Sky, started engaging with people, the insane Democrat Party, and he attempted to find common ground. So I'll share with you his tweet. He screenshotted it. It was a like blue sky. I don't know what you call them on blue sky, like blue skies. I don't know. Clouds. I don't know what you call them. These like posts, right? So he attempted to find common ground with these people, and he cited that the ruling, and he just, you know, provided facts about the ruling, and he took a picture of the ruling and stated that Justice Thomas's opinion, that he actually agreed with Justice Thomas's opinion. And he asked people on Blue Sky what they thought about the matter. So here is his exact post on Blue Sky. He says, I've been told that this app has become a place to go for common sense political discussion and analysis. So I'm thrilled to be here to engage with all of you. And he linked to, of course, the decision, Justice Thomas's opinion. And then he asked people what they thought about it. Oh, boy, this is hilarious. So to that end, I found Justice Thomas's concurrence on medical care for transgender youth quite illuminating. He argues that many of our so-called experts have used bad arguments in substandard science to push experimental therapies on our youth. I might add that many of those scientists are receiving substantial resources from Big Pharma to push these medicines on kids. What do you think? So this is what he said on Blue Sky. gosh, he's such a memer. This is the best decision. J.D. Vance, Marco Rubio, Pete Hegseth, huge decisions, great decisions by President Donald Trump. Okay, so this was the fastest anybody's ever been blocked on Blue Sky. Within minutes, J.D. Vance's account was taken down. The meltdown was absolutely hilarious. He was banned from Blue Sky within minutes of him putting that post up. And he was later unbanned, and then he was verified. But 15,000 people blocked him. Okay, and it's not stopping. More and more people are blocking him. And it's all what Blue Sky is talking about on that platform today. And the saltiness coming from these people, it's just so lovely. I just love it. Great move by Mr. Vice President. The Vice President has been reinstated. I want to make that clear to the platform. They banned him within minutes, though. Which tells you all you really need to know. This was a trap, okay? What J.D. Vance was doing was setting a trap. And he, like, essentially, have you seen those old cartoons where they prop up a cardboard box and they put, like, a little snack there and they try to trap something and they've got the stick and the rope and they pull out the stick and the box traps the little animal? the only people who fall for that are, like, cartoon villains, okay, and like Bugs Bunny, right? They do that kind of stuff all the time. And these people were stupid enough, I guess, to fall for this obvious trap. Some of my favorites, F you Nazi trash. Ah, that's wonderful. My personal favorite is this one: delete this or ban this Hitler fascist immediately. This is what people responded to J.D. Vance when he simply asked for people to engage with him about the Supreme Court ruling. He provided facts. He provided the actual concurrence from this Justice Thomas. I would love to see what Vice President J.D. Vance does next. I'd like to see him engage with the best and brightest of Blue Skies. I'd like to see him get engagement about his boss, Donald Trump. I'd like to see him get engagement regarding the immigration policies and reforms that he's implemented, Donald Trump. I'm sure that there would be some very helpful, enlightening dialogue involved and very productive dialogue involved on Blue Sky if J.D. Vance had asked them to engage regarding illegal immigration. It was genius. I love it. J.D. Vance, hilarious. Let's get to this. Frankenstein doctors cannot butcher these minor children anymore. And they can't do it under the stupid guise of transgender affirming care and compassion. This is actually compassion. So The Supreme Court of the United States, they upheld a Tennessee ban on sex changes for minors. According to the Post-Millennial, the Supreme Court upheld Tennessee's law that prohibits child sex changes. The ruling was 6-3. I think it's pretty clear who voted in favor and who voted against. Clearly, the more conservative members of the Supreme Court voted in favor of the law. Now, the court is saying that SB 1, this is the law, doesn't discriminate. Here's it all in a nutshell for you. I will summarize. So the court says that SB 1 doesn't discriminate based on a person's sex because it bans certain treatments like puberty blockers, cross-sex hormone therapy for minors, no matter if you're male or female. So this is a ban on these treatments across the board for all minors. It treats everyone the same under the law. Okay, so now here's the key idea. The court even went further, pointing out that these medical treatments are designed to change or reject, obviously, a person's biological sex. So if the goal of the treatment is to deny or alter someone's sex, then it doesn't make sense to say that the law is discriminating based on sex, because why? The very point of the intervention is to erase the distinction in the first place. So the law in and of itself is discriminatory because it tries to erase or reject a person's biological sex. So in short, the law isn't banning treatment because someone's a boy or a girl. And that's what the people had tried to argue, the people who were suing. They tried to say that the law was discriminatory. It's not, because the treatment is for all minors. Okay, so it's banning treatments that attempt to override biological sex, and it does it equally for all minors. Okay, therefore, it's not sex discrimination under the Constitution, which is what they were arguing. Chief Justice Roberts said the case involves complicated and passionate debates. I'm summarizing what his concurrence was, what his decision was. So he pretty much said that the case involves complicated and passionate debate about medical treatments, with people on all sides of the issue having real serious concerns. Okay, but it's not up to the Supreme Court. It's not the Supreme Court's job to settle these debates or decide what policies are best. It's their job to decide if the law in question violates the Constitution promise of equal protection under the law, if the law was discriminatory. Since they found it does not, they're leaving the rest of the debate to the voters and the lawmakers to work it out through the democratic process. Okay. Although I tend to agree with a little bit of what John Roberts said in his decision, I don't agree with all of it, because we shouldn't leave it up to the democratic process, No. This is genital mutilation. This is a crime. People do this in other parts of the world. They don't call it trans-affirming care. They do it in other parts of the world, and they call it torture. And this is something that shouldn't be allowed. This is chopping off people's body parts. This is serial killer Jeffrey Dahmer type crap. Okay, so I don't agree with John Roberts here, where we should leave it up to the democratic process. We should call what transgender transitioning surgery actually is. It's chopping up people. It's serial killer type vibes, okay, that I'm getting from the Democrat Party. And not only is it based on a lie that one can change their sex, which is just a lie, despite the left claiming that the premise mandates that gender and sex are two different things. Okay, so it's so dumb to begin with, because they want to change their sex to reflect their gender, but they tell you that gender and sex are two different things. So why would you need to change your sex in order to reflect your gender? So you don't believe that gender and sex are two different things, and you believe in just sex. That's what the left truly believe, because they all have the same understanding, because this is a common sense caveman understood this, that there is no such thing as a difference between gender and sex. There's just sex. There's boys and there's girls. That's it. And they even recognize that. Otherwise, they wouldn't be going to such lengths to change their sex, okay, if they believed that gender and sex are two different things. So not only is it, you know, based on this lie, but it also medically destroys these children. Puberty blockers, hormone therapy, it destroys any chance that they have at reaching full maturity and being healthy. Okay, it is, let's call it what it is, it's serial killer Jeffrey Dahmer type crap. It's weird and it's dangerous, and it's not a compassionate approach to the deranged thoughts that some of these children have, and it shouldn't be up for discussion. In fact, any doctor who performs this kind of stuff should be treated like Jeffrey Dahmer and should get a needle in the arm. Okay, you don't chop up children. Okay, the last time I checked, that was against the law. Okay, and just because you're doing it with a PhD doesn't make it any better. Okay, so leftists, they fought against this, and that's a real scandal, honestly. I don't even think that this is an 80-20 issue. I think that this is a 95-5 issue, and the 5% are just these weird serial killer type folks who like to kill children. So sanity prevailed here, at least for now. It's creepy that John Roberts had made this really milquetoast type decision. And he says, well, let's leave it up to the democratic process. John, buddy, no, stop. No. Let's call it what it is. It's killing kids. The American people have made it pretty clear that they don't like this stuff. That's why we voted Donald Trump in. Another thing that we clearly, which is like an 80-20 issue, is illegal immigration. They've made it pretty clear that the American people oppose illegal immigration, and they want it dealt with, which is why we elected Donald Trump. We elected him to also write the executive order that in the United States, we recognize that there's boys and girls. And then I want to bring this point up. Legal immigrants of the Hispanic origin, they have gone over to the side of Donald Trump. And this is a group, by the way, legal Hispanic immigrants. This is a group where the Democrats have spent decades trying to lie and manipulate them into supporting illegal immigration. It hasn't worked, and they have swung right over to Donald Trump, and they keep voting for the guy. So leave it to the Democrat Party to go all in on illegal immigration. That brings me to Maxwell Frost, who I think has a close relationship with Eric Swornson. It seems like they interact on social media quite a bit. I've seen them pictured by each other quite a few times. Maxwell Frost is a Zoomer theater kid, okay? And he cosplays as a congressman, similar to that of Eric Swornson, who's posted about peanut butter jelly sandwiches way too many times on his social media. Eric Swornson is a Illinois congressman. I can't believe how many times he posts about his damn sandwiches on social media. I actually went, I don't know why I did this, I was curious, and I counted up how many times over the last couple of years where he's posted himself taking a bite out of either a ham sandwich or a PBJ. I counted on my, over the last couple of years, 4 or 5 times. I counted them up. Like, this is statistical evidence. But you're an Illinois congressman. Have discussion about geopolitics and something of substance, right? He just goes on there and posts picture of his dog and his sandwiches. And this goes to show you that these people are not very serious people at all, and they are cosplaying as congressmen. Eric Swornson did what he did best, which was be a weatherman, okay? And he is a weatherman and a TV actor cosplaying as a congressman. He's not an actual congressman. He doesn't act like one. Neither does this Zoomer kid, theater kid. And so he has been screaming fascism, and he screams F fascism at emo concerts, by the way. And he goes over to El Salvador and he goes over there in support of human traffickers, Kilmar Abrego Garcia. Elder millennial, AOC is aging out pretty quickly, folks. Representative ROC looks at this guy and thinks he's a bit extra. Maxwell Frost and I would say Eric Sorensen are more extra than AOC. AOC, the millennial, she's an older millennial. She's aging out of this social media thing. She's a cosplayer too. She's a social media influencer and she cosplays as a congressman. She looks at this guy and I look at Eric Sorensen and Maxwell Frost and I'm like, can I have AOC, please? Like, but the media, what they've done with this Maxwell Frost guy is they have crowned him as the next Democrat Party leader, I think. And I think that they're going to try to push him out to be like a Barack Obama. He wants full amnesty for illegal immigrants right now. And doesn't that sound familiar? Tell these, or believe these people when they tell you who they are. Okay, so I think that this is the official opinion of the Democrat Party. It looks like the official opinion, considering the media has deemed this guy, Maxwell Frost, the Democrat leader of their party. Let's take a listen to what he has to say.
And to my Republican colleagues who say, I don't want any undocumented people in this country, I actually agree with you. So let's document every single one of them with a speedy path to citizenship. That's how we fix this problem.
Let's document every single one of them, he says. So the Democrats, I don't know why they do this, because this is an 80-20 issue. And when I say the left, I don't mean everyone who votes differently than I do. It's really relatively a small group of people who are a problem, and I call them the left. Okay, the rub is, though, is that this very small group of people wind up being very, very loud, because the small group of people, 98% of those types of people, I would say, exist in the media, and they exist in the big tech space prior to Elon Musk obtaining Twitter and purchasing Twitter. So they're very loud. Okay, so it's an 80-20 issue. When I say illegal immigrants should be granted amnesty and we should document everybody and just have an open border, your response, even if you are a Democrat, would be, no, we have something, a little something called sovereignty, and we need to keep our sovereignty and law and order, and we need to make sure we're checking people who come into the country and make sure that they obtain some sort of work visa, some sort of student visa. I'm almost at a point, folks, and I hate to say this, maybe I've gone way too far right, but these people have pushed me to it. I don't even really want to grant visas anymore. Work visas, student visas, it's an abused system. A lot of this is, I mean, look at the student who was granted a student visa. He wound up being like a Islamist terrorist, okay, paid for by the Islamic regime. And he was here, he was in New York, and he was terrorizing Jewish students on campus. Okay. And he wasn't, like, he lied. Okay. His intention here was to create chaos and to go after Jewish students on campus and terrorize them. And they had to lock themselves in a library, for Pete's sake. Okay. I'm almost to a point where I think that these systems are very, very abused. And unless you are becoming a naturalized citizen, and you are English speaking, and you take the test, a civics test, and you seriously want to assimilate and be a part of our American culture, I don't really want you. A lot of people I might disagree with me there. The H-1B visa system, totally abused. It's just really state-approved slave labor. So I've gotten to a point where I don't even really like student visas. I don't really like the work visas, because these types of visas are always abused. The green card system is abused. People get married and they abuse it, and they break the law with it, and they get married and they're not actually, like, intentionally, like, they're not even living with each other, and they're getting married for citizenship status, and we can't have that. Okay, so I'm almost at a point where we get rid of all these programs and we just do the basic naturalization. somebody who actually wants to be here, somebody who has to jump through all kinds of hoops in order to become an American and has to speak the language and wants to assimilate. Call me a bigot, I guess. I don't know. I'm just tired of the abuse. I'm tired of terrorists sneaking in under the guise of, oh, I'm a student. Actually, I'm here to terrorize the Jewish students on campus here in New York. So, like I said, this is an 80-20 issue. But when I say the left, this is a very small group of people who are a problem, but they are so loud because same left that, you know, politically speaking, those same types of people that hold that radical ideology and hold these radical beliefs, they dominate in these spaces run by like the media space. They dominate in the big tech space. Don't believe me. I went in to school for journalism. Okay, there's very, very little jobs when it comes to, hey, I just want to report down the center. Hey, I just want to report slightly right of center. There's very, very little compared to how many leftist organizations you can go work for. It's insane. There's five major conglomerates, and out of all those conglomerates, I think it's like Disney. I can't name all of them off the top of my head, but they all have these, like, it's like your ABCs and all of the TV stations and all of these outlets are affiliated to those five or have an affiliation for those to those five conglomerates. And it's just a very dominated space. And there's no room for people like me, no room for people like you. And they wind up getting this huge microphone, the left. But we all know that the 20% of the 80-20% issues, they control the avenues of messaging and promotion. Being pro-Hamas or letting boys pretend to be little girls and having them go hang out in little girls' locker rooms or bathrooms or genital mutilation of children, like we all, illegal immigration, we all don't hold those beliefs. All of us, like 80% of us, okay? Now, here's the rub. The people in the Democrat Party who aren't the left and are actually the majority part of the Democrat Party, they don't speak up because, like I said, we need righteous leadership. Because at the end of the day, you don't answer to activists, you answer to the Almighty God. And we need more righteous leadership. And unfortunately for the Democrat Party, the majority of the Democrat Party, not the left, the majority of the Democrat Party, they get attacked by the tiny minority and they feel like they answer to the activist. At the end of the day, they don't answer to the activist. They have to answer to the Almighty God. And the tiny majority is who controls the platforms, okay? And they know this. The Democrat Party knows this. Everybody knows this. You don't answer to the press clippings, okay? You answer to the one true God. Like, have a spine, okay? But you see what happens to Democrats who speak out. Look at John Fetterman, Seth Moulton. Okay, these people have spoken out, and they have been ripped apart by the leftist media. Maxwell Frost says that we should legalize all illegals, essentially have open borders and document anybody who comes in. And the media is telling you that he is the leader of the new Democrat or of the party. The media tells you this. No other Democrats have publicly disagreed with him. Okay, so there is no other conclusion that I can come to. And this is really unfortunate because I know that Democrats don't believe in that. There are Democrats out there that believe in borders and sovereignty. I know that. Why? Because some Democrats are Christians. And in the Christian Bible, we believe in sovereignty. We believe in borders and nations. It's like a trope that's throughout the Bible. Okay, so I know that there's Democrats who also happen to be Christians. And I know that they don't believe in that, but there's no reason, like they haven't given me a reason to not believe that this is not the official Democrat Party position, that we should just legalize all illegals and have open borders. All right, I got to take a quick break, but we're going to be right back. Smash that like button, share this out with your friends, subscribe. We'll be right back. Welcome to Conservative Cat Clips, where the claws come out and the truth lands hard. I'm your host, Cat. Today, we're pulling back the curtain on something that ought to make every Illinois taxpayer's blood boil. You're funding the abortion industry, and the abortion industry is very, very funded by the state of Illinois. So we're going to be zooming in on Illinois. What used to be the land of Lincoln is now the Midwest's abortion sanctuary. Under Governor J.B. Pritzker, Illinois has gone full throttle into becoming what he proudly calls the beacon for reproductive rights. Translation, come one, come all. Have your abortions here, and the taxpayers are going to pick up the tab. In 2019, Governor J.B. Pritzker signed the so-called Reproductive Health Act, making abortion, quote, a fundamental right in Illinois. But that wasn't all. He also repealed the Parental Notification Act for minors getting abortions. So that means little Susie, if she's 12 years old, she doesn't need her parents' permission to go get an abortion. Your 13-year-old daughter can get an abortion in Illinois, even without you knowing. And while Illinois families are struggling with inflation, property taxes, and rising crime, guess where your tax dollars are going? The last few years, just tens of millions of dollars of Illinois taxpayer dollars have gone to Planned Parenthood in just a few years, tens of millions of dollars. And they're not going to just fund the procedure itself. They're paying for out-of-state women to come here and abort their babies. It includes transportation, lodging costs, and logistical support, whatever the hell that means. I'm probably paying for some woman to get a McDonald's sandwich while she's here in the state. And literally, we're running a state-sponsored abortion tourism business. That's what we're doing here in the state. And let's not forget Planned Parenthood CEO salaries. Over $670,000 for Alexis McGill Johnson. Regional directors, they make about like six figures too. So your paycheck is shrinking, their paycheck is growing, and your roads have potholes, but Planned Parenthood thriving. Pritzker loves to pose as a champion for women, but let's be honest, this is about this isn't even about ideology. It's about power and money. He's not protecting women. He's protecting Planned Parenthood's bottom line and all of these people raking in that CEO cash. And Illinois is now the abortion capital of the Midwest because he made it that way, Governor J.B. Pritzker. Illinois used to be about opportunity and family values. Now it's the go-to state for late-term abortion. Over 46,000 abortions in Illinois were done in 2023 alone. 46,000 in Illinois alone. And many of you paid for that. And under Governor J.B. Pritzker, that number's just going to keep going up and up and up every single year. This has been Conservative Cat Clips. I'm Kat, reminding you that taxpayer-funded abortion is not compassionate. It's corruption. And all of these people are making tons of money. And it's time we demand real leadership. It's time we step up and demand that they stop funding this madness. It's time we stand for life here in the state of Illinois. What do you think?
Check your blind spots. Men love to call things out. Weakness, hypocrisy, failure. We're wired to spot threats and take action. But Jesus didn't say, never judge. He said, judge not that you be not judged. Why? Because judgment without humility is a trap. It turns you into a sniper with a log jammed in your eye. Matthew 7 hits hard. Jesus calls out a man who sees a speck in his brother's eye, but ignores the plank in his own. He's not saying, don't correct. He's saying, clean your lens first. Self-examination before confrontation. It takes guts to get real with your own sin, to admit you've gone soft, to face your pride, lust, laziness, or bitterness head on. But that's what real men do. They sharpen themselves before they sharpen others. Jesus didn't just want behavior police. He wanted heart warriors. Men who get the plank out, then humbly help a brother see clearly. Men who don't just flex spiritual authority, but walk with spiritual maturity. in verse 6, it's about discernment. Don't toss holy things to pigs. Don't waste truth on ears that mock it. Know when to speak. Know when to walk away. Before you blast through your next workout, check your form. Same with life. Patriot Pump fuels clean, focused energy, but you've still got to show up. Power with purpose. Clarity with strength. That's how you train. That's how you lead.
Hey, good morning. I'm Conservative Cat. Appreciate you being here. Subscribe to the channel. Go to patriotpumpenergy.com. Buy your bottle of Patriot Pump. $10 off at checkout. Use the promo code Conservative Cat. Let's get to some of your chats. We need righteous leadership. Yes. This is wasteful and discrimination to the taxpayers. You're talking about in Evanston with the $25,000 in housing grants, which, by the way, if you give $25,000 in a housing grant to somebody who can't afford a house, you're just going to screw that person over. Okay. If they can't afford a house, there's probably a reason why. And they're going to burn through that $25,000 grant for the house. And they're never going to save up money and actually learn the skills that it takes to buy a house and to have ownership of something and to have that personal responsibility and accountability. So when it's the same thing with like kids, right? You give them money to go to the movies all of the time. They're never really going to understand where money comes from and how much work it takes to get that $20 to go to the movie unless, you know, you actually tell them, no, I'm not going to give you the money. I want you to go work for your own money, for your own enjoyment, and then you'll understand the value of money. If you keep giving money to people who can't do it on their own, they are going to be enabled and government dependent. And really, that's all by design, because the new slavery is government dependency. Let's take this chat. Miss Crockett, she's reflecting on what she and her own party are doing. This is what they do. No surprise. Plus, she likes to see herself talk. Yeah. A lot of these people within the Democrat Party, like I said, Maxwell Frost, Eric Sorensen, Jasmine Crockett, AOC, these are all cosplayers. And I always call them like political theater nerds that never really grew up. And they're really not serious people. And it should tell you a lot about the DNC. They're going bankrupt right now. Go check this out. They're actually like scrambling to get loans because they're going bankrupt. I think it's not a coincidence that once that USAID money all dried up, thank you, Doge, right, for exposing what that money was going towards, it was all a money laundering scheme, right? So you donate all this money to the said nonprofit, then the nonprofit then turns donates money to said candidate. Okay, so it's just a money laundering scheme. Taxpayer dollars going right back into the Democrat coffers. And once that dried up, I don't think it's coincidence that they are going broke now and that they're completely broke. Once you stop allocating taxpayer funds to the Democrat coffers, they've actually got no real money because nobody really likes these people as congressmen or as elected leaders or as politicians. Like, come on, you really think that people are going to be giving money to Maxwell Frost after he said something like, oh, we should just legalize all the illegals? That's an 80-20 issue. People are against illegal immigration and they're pro-border. They're pro-sovereignty. Why? Because it's biblical. I do want to get to the righteous leadership comment. Because there was a verse that I pulled earlier in the show, and I promise we're going to get to Chuck Schumer, because Chuck Schumer was out there and he doesn't want to talk about Joe Biden's cognitive decline, by the way, and the cover-up that went on there. There was supposed to be a House Oversight Committee or a committee hearing. I think it was in the Senate. It was the Senate. They were going to talk about Joe Biden and the cover-up that went on. And he says that, you know, people don't really care about Joe Biden and the cover-up and what happened there. We do. We're going to get to that here in just a second. But first, the righteous leadership thing. I talked about that earlier this morning, and I pulled a verse because Speaker Chris Welch, he allocated $40 million to his district, to a school district, to build a sports stadium in his district. Okay, and I pulled this. Proverbs 28, verse 15 says, like a roaring lion or a charging bear, is a wicked ruler over poor people. So what does that mean? It means leaders who abuse their power, who take from people to enrich themselves or their image, they're dangerous. And then I pulled another quote or another verse. This is Luke 16, verse 10. Whoever can be trusted with very little can also be trusted with much. Whoever is dishonest with very little will also be dishonest with much. So Speaker Chris Welch was trusted with a lot. He wasn't trusted with a little. He was handed much, $40 million. And what did he do? Instead of showing integrity, he used this power that he has, and he carved out a vanity project for his district, and he denied an equal opportunity for others. So that's not just bad politics. I want to make it clear. This is unrighteous leadership. SD, Governor J.B. Pritzker, he is a man who has never seen an immoral plan or action he doesn't like. Yeah, it makes you really wonder, who is he trying to please? Well, I'm convinced, and I've told you guys this several times, that I don't call the state of Illinois state of Illinois anymore. I don't recognize the state. I don't live in a state. I live in a separate country, that of the United States. Because if you go to other places in the United States, it's wildly different. I have family in South Carolina. And the way things are run, it's night and day. The people are nicer, number one, that nice Southern hospitality. But when you look at the infrastructure, when you look at their major cities, for example, Greenville, South Carolina, you look at that city in comparison to a Bloomington, Illinois. The infrastructure in Bloomington, Illinois sucks. They've got the worst roads. I mean, this isn't exaggeration. I think it was actually, there was a study done where Bloomington had potholes, like the worst potholes in the nation, or like was the third worst in the nation, like when it came to potholes in their roads. Okay. Sorry, excuse me. When you go to major cities, in traditionally Republican-run states, it's just better. The infrastructure is better. The roads are better. People are nicer. The crime is down. You don't feel like you've got to carry a knife on you or pepper spray when you're walking in these major cities in Republican-run states. And in Republican-run cities. For right now, right, Greenville specifically, it isn't as blue as other major cities in that state, South Carolina. I just know South Carolina because I've been there and I've seen with my eyes the major differences. So in Illinois, it's not a state, really. It's a separate country because you go to other places, it's not run nearly like any other state, really, that I've been to. And I say it because the governor is also not acting as a governor of a state in the United States of America. He has sanctioned other countries, El Salvador. He has made global trade deals. And I don't know if these actually like amounted to anything, but he's attempted to at least do these things with the UK, with Mexico and Canada, right? He's also worked with CCP tied companies, Goshen, and has given them tax credits, and other companies that he's deemed worthy winners, tax credits. In the case of Goshen, it was to the tune of over $500 million. Okay. And who did that help? That bolstered, obviously, in their platform. So Goshen, they have like bylaws, like most businesses, right? And in their bylaws, they say something to the effect of like to serve the CCP or to serve the Chinese government. Okay, so like I'm not exaggerating here. Goshen has ties to companies who practice in the slave labor of Uyghurs. And he works with these types of people and he gives money to these types of people. And that is not, that's a national security risk. And that is not the actions of somebody who is operating a state within the United States of America. So I don't call Illinois, Illinois anymore. It's Pritzkerstan. It's a totally separate state, that of the United States of America. Yeah, and it makes you really question, who is he following? There's something that Governor J.B. Pritzker did, and this is the moment where I was like, it all clicked for me. And I've been covering, you know, state politics for a long time, but this is what really did it for me. There's something called the Secure Choice Program. And what they do, they automatically take, I think it's like 5% out of people's paycheck. Now, this is something that you're automatically enrolled in, the Secure Choice Program. You have to opt out. I had to opt out of this. And most people don't opt out because they're automatically opted in. And your employer has to inform you to opt out or opt in. And some employers, you know, busy, this is a mandate, right? They might not inform you. We had a smaller staff, and my boss at the time had informed us, like, hey, you can either opt in or opt out of this program. When you've got a staff of over 20, it starts to get a little tough to tell everybody, you know, and babysit everybody. So you have to opt out of this thing. You're automatically opted in. This is a retirement program. And basically, it takes this money, and it is it's an asset. And the asset managers are BlackRock and another big bank. Okay. The asset managers have this big lump of money from everybody in the United States, or from everybody in Pritzkerstan, Illinois, from everybody in Illinois practically, because if you don't opt out of it, you're automatically opted in. This is a lot of people, and their paychecks are pretty much garnished. They'll see it. It's their retirement money, but they're, money's taken away from them and put in this little kitty, in this pile of money. It's an asset now. And the asset managers are BlackRock. Well, what does BlackRock do with this lump sum, this money that's been taken out of Illinoisans' paychecks for the retirement? They go and then they go and take out loans for big high rises and apartment complexes. And they bolster their portfolio with this asset. Then you dig further and you find out that BlackRock contributes to the Tides Foundation, which is Pritzker family, George Soros family. And you're thinking to yourself, wow, was this a thank you to BlackRock? And then you realize these people aren't in it for me at all. You know, so this question of, I wonder who he's trying to follow or please. Follow the money. That's my two cents. I didn't get to Chuck Schumer today. It's the end of the show. My voice is getting real raspy. I got to go rest, folks, because I have been sick all week. But I'm on the mend. It's like this weird transition from like spring to summertime. I always get this. It's like a weird season cold. But I am so grateful that you were here. Be sure to hit the subscribe button, share this out with your friends, and tell people about the show. Tomorrow morning, I will have a show. It's going to be about an hour, maybe 30 minutes, 40 minutes. We'll see. But you guys are welcome to join that show Saturday mornings. I'm going to start doing this for you, and we'll cover the Chuck Schumer thing then. And I will also probably provide an update on Iran versus Israel and what's been going on in the Middle East. And we will do a show tomorrow morning at 7 a.m. Central Time. So don't miss that. Bye-bye. Love you so much. And have a blessed weekend.